This episode is sponsored by Paleo Valley's pasture-raised chicken sticks. I'm super excited to share Paleo Valley's brand new pasture-raised chicken sticks. These chicken sticks are made from 100% pasture-raised chicken and organic spices that are preserved using natural fermentation rather than preservatives. So yes, no fake stuff or additives here. These chicken sticks are sourced from regenerative family farms raised on American pastures, and each stick is free of chemicals, antibiotics, pesticides, and added hormones. Paleo Valley's chicken sticks are a perfect snack packed with 7 grams of protein and, frankly, a great value without skimping on quality. Make sure to support this podcast and head over to paleovalley.com/NWJ and use code NWJ to get 15% off your order. Thanks again for listening and supporting this podcast. Hey guys, it's Judy from Nutrition with Judy. Thanks for joining me today. While you're here, please make sure to like and subscribe. My name is Judy Cho, and I'm board certified in holistic nutrition. And I have a private practice where we focus on root cause healing. And it often starts with the Carnivore Cures All Meat Elimination Diet. Today, I had the pleasure of sitting down again with Robert Sykes. He's been on our channel a couple of times, and we talked a lot about just building mass, losing weight, and doing reverse dieting so that you can support yourself to have a nice body or a healthy, nice body. So if you are interested in that conversation, this is not the conversation for you, but I will put in the show notes our past interviews. This conversation is all about entrepreneurship, business, building your own business, and what it takes to be a successful entrepreneur. We talk about coaching and when you start feeling change and healing with eating a carnivore diet, how people then decide and want to become coaches and what it may take from our opinions of what it takes to be successful. Robert Sykes is the founder of Keto Savage Coaching and also the founder of Keto Brick, and he's an accomplished keto bodybuilder. Robert also has the popular Keto Savage podcast, as well as YouTube channel, and he has the clothing brand Live Savage. Robert has a lot of other companies that he mentions on our interview because we talk about all things business. So you can find more information about him there. I think they even have a homestead channel that you can check out if you're trying to build your own homestead. Robert is a jack of many, many trades, but he also gets very niche and he talks a lot about that in our interview. If you are looking at changing careers and finding your passion and pursuing your passion when it comes to what you will do for the rest of your life or your purpose, this is the interview for you. I hope that this conversation brings you a lot of light, but also a lot of realities to what it takes to own a successful business. Let's get right into the interview. Hi, Robert. Thank you so much for joining me again on my channel. I will link to all our old episodes. I think, is this our third one? I don't even know.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Okay. So I think it is, but I'll put that in the show notes. But today, our conversation is going to be pretty different. I wanted to have you introduce yourself from your business perspective of being an entrepreneur, coach, and I guess an advocate in general.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I love business. You and I talk business every time we're together. So, I'm excited to do it on a recording now. But yeah, as far as like a quick little intro, my life from a business standpoint, I'd kind of always wanted to be in business. I'd had multiple failed business attempts. And then after I graduated college, I went the corporate route. I was a train master at the railroad after I got my degree. And I was in management. I was working in a small desk and it just was never my thing. I tried to get into real estate while also doing that. Got my real estate license with the intention of flipping houses and buying rental properties. And all the while I was continuing to do my natural bodybuilding and, you know, pursue the ketogenic diet. And then I just decided, you know what, I'm going to totally deviate from the standard path of corporate America. I'm going to not go the traditional route of, you know, flipping internet businesses and whatnot. I'm going to just double down on the things I'm passionate about, which is the ketogenic diet and natural bodybuilding. And that's how Keto Savage was born. And that's kind of morphed into all the different business entities that I have now. But that was pretty much the root cause of it all.
That's crazy. So I didn't know about all of your other businesses. Was it the love of business or building things? Was it the desire to make a sustainable income? Like what was all of that? And then what led to Keto Savage?
Yeah, kind of a combination of all the above. So my uncle owns his own business and I'd work for him during the summer. And I just loved to see him hustling on his own thing. That instilled a lot of desire in me. My cousins owned their own business and they were really successful with it. And I just didn't want to be beholden to a 9-to-5 job doing something that I wasn't truly inspired to do. So I always knew that I wanted to own my own business. I wanted to make my own money and not have it be capped by, you know, a set salary or anything like that. But I didn't really know what that business would look like. So I dove into everything. Like I tried to do Amazon sales. I tried to do a first attempt at a book way back when. I tried to, you know, flip things and drop ship things and just do a lot of things that you hear and see in the get rich quick schemes of business. And it wasn't until I totally moved away from the get rich quick scheme and just started doubling down the long, arduous road of doing it the right way that I actually started seeing some success with it.
Yeah. So let's move into the success stuff. And I want this to be a conversation. So I'll share a little bit of my thing. So I had like the opposite experience as you. My parents were always entrepreneurs. They had stores and then they also had a contractor. My dad was a contractor. So he was, I think it was 1099, but he was always his own business and his own schedule, but they were really, really ethically, I guess they were, their work ethic was just really to a level that, you know, I've learned to work as hard, if not maybe too much, but seeing them. And then my brother had a store and it was very successful. And I thought, oh my gosh, I never want to work as much as you guys. And so I wanted to never get into the entrepreneur space. And I told my parents, I was a consultant and I will stay in the corporate world because I don't have to worry after I leave the company or like after I leave my desk job of are the lights on or anything. And I get to just work a basic amount of hours for a decent living. Mm-hmm. Then I got sick and then I ended up falling into it on accident. I just wanted to help people, but not realizing, oh my gosh, I'm falling into the entrepreneur world. So it's interesting that we both had exposure to it. And then it just led us, I guess, eventually to it anyway. But what do you think makes you successful, right? Like what do you think it was about Keto Savage that makes you more passionate and more successful than any of the other endeavors you've done prior?
As far as compared to the other endeavors, like it came from a sense of necessity on my own part. Like I was struggling with disordered eating tendencies and I hadn't got the whole diet thing figured out. So there was a high demand for my own personal being to get that dialed in life. And same thing with the Keto Break business too. That came out of my own personal need as well. So rather than, you know, trying to find like rather than trying to create a product and then find a market to sell it to, I just looked for the problem that I was personally experiencing, assumed that other people were having a similar problem, and then set out to find a solution for it. So that's kind of like how I modeled that. But as far as like the success of the other things or failure rather the other things, it just was the intentions and the motivations were not there. Like the desire to make a lot of money. I mean, most people have that desire so that they can live freely and live on their own terms, but that can't really be the driving factor for you to really see success. Because if you're just in it to make a lot of money and then you hit an obstacle or roadblock, which you most certainly will, right, there's oftentimes not enough of a why to create the momentum to bust through that. Whereas like if you're doing it for reasons more deep than that, then when those moments come and those obstacles and roadblocks come, you're going to do it anyways because you will have a driving purpose behind it all. And then the money will hopefully come as a result as well because you're adding value.
No, I love that. I think that's so true. That's been my experience as well. You know, some people ask me, do you like working as much as you do? And I never meant to work this much. I definitely work way more than when I was a consultant, but I love the work I do. So I don't view it as work. I mean, there's some administrative things I have to do that's part of the job, but generally speaking, I feel like I'm just living my passion. And sure, sometimes it's busier than other times or there's more hard work involved. But generally speaking, because I love what I do, even if I run into hiccups, it's not I have to just do my job, but rather that I'm just trying to, I feel like we're playing this game and we're just trying to get to the end or get through a journey. And the journey may never end. And that's just the beauty of it, right? It's just, what do we make of our journey to make it this incredible thing and then build things for other people to benefit from and be supported from. So I can totally relate to that.
I think going into business without having this, you know, finish line mentality. And that's the same thing with like body composition and health. Like you don't really want to have this finish line mentality of, hey, when I reach this weight, it's done. I'm over. I've met the goal. same is true with business. Like, you don't really have you don't want to have a certain number in the bank account or, you know, a certain amount of financial security to say, okay, now it's done. I've reached that point. I feel like finding a lifestyle that you would truly enjoy doing to the point where you would not want to deviate from it is going to be much more sustainable through and through. And you're going to add more value over time and it's going to be more enjoyable. So yeah, I don't have a finish line mentality at all.
Hey guys, just to let you know, my Carnivore Cure book is back in stock. For 9 months, it was out of print and used prices were up to $300. Make sure to get your copy today that has over 200 colored tables and graphics and over 400 pages of meaty goodness. We have a limited supply, so get your copy today on Amazon.com. And if you can leave a review, I'd be super grateful. Same. So then what drives you? So what gives you that passion every single day?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I just, the clock is ticking, like I'm going to die. And I want to know that I made an impact, a positive impact. I want to leave the world a better place than I found it. And that sounds very, you know, abstract, and I guess it is, but there's like this thing in me. I've been trying to quantify this too. There's like this driving force in me that I can't even really put my finger on that just tells me that I'm destined for more than I'm doing, and I have to keep pursuing that. And now that I have a son, like I look at him and I just want to add value for him. Like I want to create a better environment for him to grow up in and see the work that I do as a vehicle for success and recognize that, hey, when you put your mind into something, when you put your heart and passion into something and you put the work in, then you can build it to whatever you want to become. I want the business to be a vehicle for him to recognize that you can get out of life what you put into it. And that drives me quite a bit.
I feel that a lot of the internet shows this get quick rich, right? Like overnight, if you do something with your YouTube videos that you can get 10,000 views from your, I see all these ads all the time. And I just think that's not the truth about being successful. I think people think it's so easy. They did one reel and they got millions of views, or they did this and it's just so easy. But I don't think it is that easy. And I just, you know, want to hear your thoughts about, you know, how much hard work do you really put in to make Keto Savage as successful as it is?
Yeah, like I am definitely not the get rich quick. Like since I had so much failure with that before, like I've just gone a complete 180 from it. Like I don't even look at it if it's promising results in, you know, minutes, days, or hours. Like I get excited when I hear that it's going to take 10 years to see the fruits of your labor. Like that's what drives me. My superpower is just this bulldog mentality to put my head down and get to work and grind for as many years as I need to. So that's, you know, where I shine. But as far as like the get rich quick mentality, like it's never that easy. Like there are no overnight successes that I've come across. Like people over sensationalize things and they popularize things, and social media is great at doing that and showing the highlight reel. But there's so many things that I've put in work for that people have no idea about. Same is true with you. Like people look at you stepping on stage at a conference and speaking on an entrepreneur panel, and they just assume that you've got it all figured out from the get-go. But like, they don't know the long hours that you've put in. They don't know the long hours that I've put in. And it's really easy to be an armchair quarterback and say, hey, you should have done it this way or that way. What money you have now, you can invest in this or that. But like when you've bootstrapped it from the very beginning and you know what's yielded the results and what hasn't, you just have a much better pulse on the success and failure and foundation of your business. And then you can move forward much more strategically.
How do you keep the mindset of the, you know, you're saying that that's a blessing, first of all, to be able to say, I'm going to stick to this for about 10 years and just work hard and see what the outcome is. A lot of people don't have that. I don't know if it's bandwidth, but definitely the runway. Maybe financially they need the money to come earlier, or maybe they just get tired of whatever they're doing. How do you have the grit and perseverance on a day-to-day basis when sometimes it's just you're grinding and you don't see a lot of fruit from it? How do you keep going?
Well, time is going to pass anyway. It's like, you know, there's not going to be a push pause button on time. So you can spend that time working for somebody else and building up their business. And if you need the financial means, or, you know, money to pay for yourself, your groceries, your food, water, and shelter, your family, then maybe you have to go that route, you know, work for somebody else for the time being. And that's fine. Like, I don't want to ever turn my nose up to people that are working for somebody else. But if you're working for somebody else and you're complaining about your life, and then you're spending the remaining hours after you clock out at the end of the day watching Netflix videos, then you're not really making the most use of your time. So multiple times in my life, I've worked four jobs at a time. One time I was working five jobs at a time. Like, that is not enjoyable, but that's what I had to do to make ends meet while continually building up my own business on the side until my own business replaced everything else that I was doing. And that's how I did it. Now, I'm not even going to be naive to the fact that if you have, you know, kids and you're starting a business later in life, like, that's going to be harder, but the time is going to pass anyways and you will die. So you have to figure out what it is you want to spend your time doing. And if that lifestyle shift is worthwhile enough for you to pursue it, then sacrifice what you have to do to make that a reality.
So I can speak to, I was a consultant for most of my career and then I got sick, but I already had my first child and my income was beyond six figures. And so it was a very hard decision that I figured this passion of mine, which has healed me, now I want to share it with the rest of the world. But how do we make it make sense when we looked on, I think it was Glassdoor, one of those websites that showed the salary caps, and the average nutritionist made $50,000. And that is a decent amount for some people, but for us, that was far less than how much I used to make. So it was this, well, what do you want to do? And I think we just decided if we can try for a couple years and hit 50, then I'm still going to go because that's where my heart is. And we put in so much effort, or I put in so much effort, and we went beyond that 50. And what I realized is, yes, there's the Glassdoor said that's the average, that's the higher end, but you can break these glass ceilings that they have out there and you can do more than that. And now our company is run by my husband and myself. So my husband quit his job as a project manager and now works on our team to help it grow to even become a bigger company. And we were questioning if we should even go down this route because we thought it could never afford our family a life that we had prior. And so to our shock that we actually have built a much bigger thing, but we also bust our butt to make it successful, right? We put in our all, we put in our blood, sweat, and tears that whatever we produce or we put out there, whether it's for clients, social media, the summit, we make sure that it's like, oh, it looks pretty good, right? And I think that hard work, while it's such hard work, it does pay off. And I think that's a big thing as I'm going to ask the next question. If people have to be ready to put in that level of effort. I don't know if you agree that you need to put in that much effort, but we hear so many people like, I healed from my diet and now I want to coach others. And I see people sometimes kind of flounder. What do you think is causing them to flounder? And is it that they're not working? I mean, just being wholly honest, is it that they're not putting in as much effort? Like, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, you and I have both been in the keto space, the carnivore space for quite a while. We were in it before it was popular. And I think that was good. Like, okay, we hit the market at a really good time because we were like the first mover advantage. And you know, we just timed things very well. And a lot of that was just kind of by chance. But a lot of people come in now from a coaching standpoint. And I mean, keto coaches right now are a dime a dozen. And I feel like a lot of that is simply because they're coming in for this get rich quick mentality that coaching supposedly provides. You know, you're able to work from anywhere, work from a computer, online coaching is the way to go. All you need to do is get one of these super simple certifications, if even that, and then you're off to the races. You know, you and I both got into the space because we had our own health issues and our own health concerns. And then once we resolved those via our lifestyle shifts, we were so passionate and blessed that we wanted to share that with others. And I think that is what a lot of coaches are lacking. They're just in it to make money. And that's unfortunate, but it's what you see all the time. Like, you'll see people get into keto coaching and then all of a sudden, like, keto or carnivore is not the new fad. So they'll change their name and they'll chase the next shiny rainbow pot of gold thing. And when you do that too many times, like, people can start to see through it. And I mean, there's been a lot of people that have asked me, hey, are you going to rebrand? Are you going to shift direction with the popularity of keto kind of waning? And it's like, no, I mean, this is what changed my life. This is what I'm going to double down on. There's always going to be people that need this and benefit from it. And when they're looking for somebody, they're going to be able to see me, who's been in the trenches since day one and is speaking a consistent message from the very beginning. The same is true with you. And I feel like people, while they can be very naive and ignorant as to what's right and what's wrong, after enough time passes, they can see truth and honesty and integrity. And when you're doing things for the right reasons from the get-go, you can't ignore that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I do think what I find interesting, and I'm curious to know your thoughts, because I know you have a coaching arm, but that's not your main arm of business. The coaching arm for us makes money, but it's a lot harder of our resources because it's one-on-one coaching and that takes a lot more time. It's so much harder to scale. So if I were to do everything all over again, I don't know if I'd do one-on-one. From a financial perspective, I think from a clinical side, it's so important to work with people. But if I were just talking economics, the one-on-one coaching, while you learn quickly, it is such a, you only have a finite amount of time and a finite amount of people you could meet that the finances there doesn't add up very smartly unless you grow big on social media and then you sell like a booklet or an ebook that to your hundreds of thousands of followers and you make money with like $10, $20 things or you create this crazy group. But the one-on-one coaching itself, there's a cap in how much money you can make. And I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, when I first started, coaching was the only leg of the business. That was the first thing that we launched. For a while, like it took me a while to scale to it. But at one point I was managing 100 one-on-one clients a day. I was messaging them all each individually multiple times a day. And I was just getting no sleep. And I was charging like $100 per client for a month of coaching. And I mean, I went from being broke to doing that. So that was a massive leap forward, but it was certainly not sustainable, not scalable. And it was running me ragged. And I mean, it's hard to manage 100 people if you're doing a one-on-one. So I have since dropped that number way, way down because for me, like I don't want to have that many clients. I'd rather have a closer, better interaction with a smaller handful of people than to try and manage 100 people. Now, you know, I've got multiple different legs of the business. Coaching, as you said, is not my main source of revenue generation, but I love coaching and I probably always will coach on a one-to-one basis because it keeps me sharp. There's a lot of people that are, you know, world-renowned coaches and world-renowned doctors, but they haven't been in the clinical setting for years and they lose touch of what can happen, what the market's wanting, what the people are needing. They just lose touch. They don't have that pulse on the industry anymore. And I think for me, I'm a better businessman and a better educator because I'll always maintain some degree of one-on-one coaching. So I can maintain that pulse on how things are moving in the space.
Totally. That is exactly the reason I keep my one-on-ones as well. I think when there's like new science or new research, or when people say, this is the way to do exercise, or this is the way to eat, when we implement it with our clientele, and especially when it's one-on-one, we see the challenges and we see where it's like, oh, okay, it doesn't, from the white tower to the clinical practice, it doesn't line up. And you'll always see nuances. And that's where I can advocate so hard for what I stand and believe in on like social media, because I see it in my clients. Otherwise, it would just be an N equals one. And as I'm healing or healed, it's harder for me to make a case if someone says something else. But then in my clientele, I see actually that's not true. And liver does affect people, or something else does affect someone. And while the science shows that it's super beneficial, there are nuances. And I totally agree with you. I think that's where you stay in touch with reality when you still work with one-on-one individuals. And I think in social media, like the big flaw I see, which I know it makes sense economically again, but the bigger somebody gets in the wellness space, the less they work with one-on-one individuals. So they don't almost work with anybody. So now they're sharing stuff from a idealistic point of view or the next best literature in science, but they don't work with anyone again to see if it actually plays out.
Yeah, I think being able to work one-on-one is so key. I mean, especially for people that are doing things that are contrarian to what the masses believe. I mean, carnivore is not what is coming down from the top down. And my approach to ketogenic bodybuilding is certainly not what is preached and spoken of in the masses of the bodybuilding space. But if I can point to multiple clients that have also earned their pro card status via my direct protocol, it opens people's eyes as to the possibility. Same is true with you. If you're not just healing yourself, but multiple other people, like that can't really be ignored for long.
No, I think that makes sense. So then how do you marry that? So if I was a brand new coach and I'm listening to this and I say, I would love to get into the carnivore, keto or wellness space, and because I've healed and now I want to share that passion with others, I'm hearing one that doing one-on-one coaching is harder to scale. And it maybe is not as sustainable for a long-term career, but I need to balance having some so that it works. So then one of the biggest questions I get is, where do I start? Right. So then if I say you should do social media, maybe write a book and you did this, and I see their faces just gloss over. Like, how would you have someone get started when they're like, I think I'm ready to make the leap and change jobs. Yeah. How do I do it?
What I did, I don't know if this was the right way to go about it, but I started coaching the people that I was interacting with on a day-to-day basis anyway. So like friends and family and training partners. And those are always the hardest clientele to work with. Like your family and friends are like the last people. They're going to be like the slowest to pay you or not pay you at all. They're going to like have the most excuses and expect you to be understanding of them. Like that's the worst demographic of clientele, but it's the easiest stepping stone to get your feet wet with training and coaching people. So if you can master working with your friends and family, then everybody else is going to be super easy from that point. So that would be a pretty good place to start and just simply replicate those results. Like be doing it for a while yourself, first and foremost. Like I've been doing keto for years before I ever coached my first client. And then I started with the people that were in my own inner circle and then branched out from there and built content along the way. Like I didn't simply say, hey, I'm nobody. And now I'm the world's greatest natural bodybuilder that's ketogenic. You know, like I went from not knowing what I was doing and just simply documenting my process. You know, a lot of people, they fall into this fake it till you make it mentality. And I hate that phenomenon. Like if you are having to fake it, then you're not really holding up to that integrity and transparency that we talked about earlier. Whereas if you're simply documenting your journey and showcasing what is and is not working for you, people resonate with that. People appreciate that honesty. People appreciate that transparency. And if you are being truly authentic, people will seek you out because they recognize that authenticity. And you'll get people that are wanting to work with you simply because they appreciate the honesty. So yeah, I'm not a fan of the fake it till you make it. Just simply document your journey. And then doing so will yield a follower count. That's what happened to me over years. But it's going to be a much more loyal audience base because they've seen how far you've come.
Yeah. No, that actually makes a lot of sense. When I first started, I was just sharing infographics and I was trying not to share a lot about my life. But I think the more I share about my story, people feel more connected to my content. So I think that makes a lot of sense. But if you had to select, so let's say there's no one knows me. And so how am I going to even get coaches? Which I think that makes sense. In our NTA groups, we would have free or practice clients and we would pick people that we knew in our own inner circle. So that was how we started practicing. But it's still a leap to then start advocating and practicing with people that we don't know. Do we start with social media? Like, how do we start getting our name out there?
Yeah, I mean, social media is huge. Like I've got a love-hate relationship with social media, as I think most people do. People that don't own a business and they're on social, like they look to it for, you know, connections, personal relationships, inspiration, motivation, which is great. But then when you own your own business, like you look to social media as the modern day's form of marketing, and it becomes more of a job. Like I don't really scroll on social media. Like I'm there, same. I'm posting, I'm generating content, I'm going through DMs like I would emails. But it's not something that I'm like, oh, I'm super excited to jump on social media today. It's just a form of me to have a touch point with potential client base and the community at large. But yeah, from a business networking and marketing standpoint, social media is key. There's a million different medium platforms. There's, you know, written, audio, and visual. And I feel like you got to kind of play to your strong suit. So like I've got the Instagram, I've got the podcast, I've got the YouTube channel. I don't do much written content. You are way better at me when it comes to written content and infographics. Like you've got that dialed in. That's not my strong suit. I probably should do more of that, but I think it's important to play to your strengths. And for someone that's getting in, like I wouldn't recommend trying to do all social media platforms at the same time, because then you'll likely not get any traction or momentum in any of them and burn out. So pick one or two or three maybe that you feel resonate with you most and then just double down on those over time.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing, is finding what works for you the most. I do like to write. So I know most people don't like writing and don't like to read, and they want more of the videos. But I think I'm not naturally a video person. I'm not somebody that's like, I mean, I could try to be dynamic, but that's just not my natural personality to be like, what's up, guys, right? And do that. It's just, that's the whole fake it till you make it. So I can't do that kind of stuff. Or that's not my strong suit. So I prefer to do graphics and writing, and that's just my skill set. And so I double down on that, right? So that's why I like to still do articles, even though I'm sure like no one reads them, but I like to do graphics and thank you. I know you have a book. I know. And I think that's where, instead of trying to get on YouTube or trying to do certain things, it's just find what you're really good at. And then, like you said, double down on that. And it's not about getting on every social media platform. So just saying that I'm not a big video person, we don't really have a presence on TikTok. And I know that people could say, oh, that's a mistake, you're losing market share, but that's fine. Like I'm willing to lose that market share. Maybe I spend more time, or we are in our company right now trying to spend more time on getting keyword optimization, so that when people search Google for carnivore, well, our articles show up because we like to write, right? And do the graphics. And so maybe that's where we're going to find more market than on TikToks doing reels that I don't like doing. So I think that's where people need to be super honest with themselves and think of not what do I need to learn, but rather what are you good at? And then find the platform that will help support that even more. But, you know, on this topic, what do you think, if you could do it again, are there certain platforms you may have started first or you would have done first?
I mean, honestly, when I first started, it was mainly the podcast, YouTube, and Instagram. And I've never really been much on Facebook. And honestly, those three, the podcast, Instagram, and YouTube would probably be the three main ones that I would target initially. But that said, you know, there are certain barriers to entry to some of these in that you look at a YouTube video and now we've got like a full-blown production studio. I've got a full-time media master on site. Like, he's one of my full-time employees. He does all my video editing, shooting, camera work. Like, I didn't have that when I first started. Like, I was filming with a cell phone on a crappy tripod in the closet with a black beach towel as the backdrop. You know, like, you have to just simply start where you're at and recognize that it's not going to be production quality at the onset. But that's okay, because people can appreciate seeing that transform over time as well. Knowing, you know, there are some that's going to have higher barriers to entry, like video is going to typically be a little bit more of a skill set than just simply making an Instagram post. But if you really like video format, then you definitely want to be on YouTube. So just kind of playing around that, seeing what sticks, seeing what doesn't, and then just doubling down the ones that you're starting to gain momentum in.
Yeah, I think it's key to not spend all the, you don't need all the bells and whistles to be successful. I think that's a mistake that people make. I mean, when we recorded the audiobook for Carnivore Cure, we couldn't figure out, do we rent a studio? And it's like, oh, it's so expensive and there's certain hours. So I literally went into my husband's closet. That's because it's the smallest and he has a bunch of clothes, which makes it good for sound barrier. And then we put towels around and we just made this makeshift way to record, and it's okay enough, right? So maybe our next book, it'll be a little bit nicer, but it's just getting started. It's not, okay, what kind of camera do I need or mic or this? It's just, if you have something that you can share with the world that can benefit someone, you just have to get started. And that's just the thing, is having your first foot forward rather than I need all of this to then get started. Because even if you have all of that, even if you have the best graphics, it doesn't mean that it'll take off.
Yeah, 100% agree. Now, you do realize that everybody listening to this is going to now picture you sitting in your closet looking at your husband's trousers while they're listening to your book.
I mean, that's how I literally recorded. There was like a towel over me and it was just,
it was
the worst experience of my life. It is so much harder to record an audiobook because the way you talk and intonations matter so much more that you're just not aware of. And so I give kudos to anybody that's does audiobooks for a living. It's very difficult, but
yeah, it's impressive.
Yeah. So, you know, do you think there are certain skill sets? I mean, even when you hire somebody, are there certain skill sets that you know, or talents or personality traits that you look for that you think this person, whether it's an entrepreneur, meaning that they're inside a business and supporting the entrepreneur, or even that they want to be their own coach or their own entrepreneurship, is there certain, or are there certain skill sets of a person that you're like, oh, you're going to make it?
Yeah. So we've hired and fired quite a few people now over the years. And that's the hardest part of a business is,
totally,
is managing people, figuring out good talent, good people, good personality traits. And I could speak very easily to what are not good traits. When it comes to what are good traits, honestly, it's not really so much the skill sets. Like, if, like, I can train somebody how to, you know, make a keto brick. I can train somebody how to edit a video. I can train somebody how to upload some content. What I can't train people as easily to do is to how to be a good person with a good work ethic and an open mind and a willingness to learn and pursue, you know, and pursue greatness on a day-to-day basis. I don't expect excellence of any of my employees. Like, we're all going to make mistakes. We're all going to grow together, but I expect them to pursue getting better one day to the next. And if somebody has that mentality, I'll take that all day long over somebody that doesn't have that, but has a whole bunch of skill sets in the back of their pocket. So just simply having a willingness and a desire to learn and be better every single day and to be part of something bigger. Like, I don't want anybody that works for me to just be here to collect a paycheck. Like, I try to foster this mentality of, hey, you're part of something that's bigger than you, part of something bigger than me. Let's double down on something that could be great, and I believe to be great, and know that we're growing something that's adding value to the world on a much bigger scale than just any of us can do as an individual. And I think when you do that and you open their eyes to the possibility, then they get a lot more buy-in. Like, they're excited to be a part of that. And I think that for me is one of the most fulfilling things that I've done within the business, being able to provide opportunities for employees and an environment that fosters growth in them is something that I take a lot of passion in.
No, I love that. When I was a consultant, I managed a lot of teams, and there were some like masters and graduation and just like graduated from really good colleges and master programs, and they didn't want to do like this entry-level work of, can you go and staple these papers? And they would say, why can't you do it? And it wasn't me. It was just a specific situation that I remembered. But that attitude where you're not willing to do anything just to help the team or support the team or just to be part of a team, and I am better than this, whatever the role may be, is, I think it's a red flag, for example. But the way that I manage our team is that I'm not below any task, that anything that you do, I can do. And I will make sure to never be like, can you go get me some coffee? You know, that type of attitude. We're all virtual, so that makes no sense anyway. But, you know, like little things that I can do, I will try to do, and to make sure that it's a team and it's a collaborative effort. But I agree with you. If someone has a, I'm not going to do that, or that's not my role, or the, you know, XYZ thing, where there's a bad attitude of willingness to learn and grow and be part of a community effort to grow something big, I think that's a big red flag. And so I think if someone's an entrepreneur on their own and they're not willing to do the, like, the harder admin work or work that doesn't fire them up, then those are red flags of how are you going to ever grow a business to be super successful and have everything and comprehensive. It's not, when you're a coach, there's much more than just being a coach. You need to create like files or things that you can give out to your clients, or creating like the Zoom calls or the scheduling. And there's a bunch of other things, collections, like how do you collect payments, right? And how do you get all of that out? And I don't think we think that when we're like, I just want to coach, I just want to get on a call with you and then just have a conversation. There's so much more back-end stuff that is required. And I think if people aren't willing to put in that work or have that fervor, then they won't be as successful.
Yeah, there's absolutely, I mean, this goes true with whatever industry you're in, but if there's going to most certainly be tasks within your role as a business owner, an entrepreneur, that you don't love to do, you know, like whether that's accounting or data entry or, you know, content creation, like there's all those tasks for somebody. But you have to just be able to like do them, eat the frog, as the saying goes. Like, do those less desirable tasks first, so that everything beyond that is something that you are truly excited about doing. Like right now, I just got a new vehicle for the company, and I've got to like do the whole DMV thing, you know, go to the DMV. And I don't love that, but it's part of the business. It's a necessary part of the business. So you just take that in stride, knowing that it's part of something bigger that you do love, and that makes it that much more enjoyable.
No, that's exactly right. Are there other lesser favorite things that you work on? And then do you learn to just delegate it? Or how do you kind of function with all of that?
Yeah. So there's things that I delegate for sure. Like the actual brick production, like I am very rarely in the kitchen making keto bricks. Like if we have a employee out for something and then I've just got to go in there and help package, then I certainly will. I think it's good that my employees see me doing that. Right. But generally speaking, I'm not the one making the keto bricks anymore. I'm not the one doing a lot of the cleaning of the facilities and things of that nature. I certainly do it, and they see me take out the trash and things like that. But I try to, you know, allow myself to be focused on the things that are going to be moving the needle forward from a strategy standpoint. So what are the big bottlenecks of the company now? How can I overcome those? How can I change this from an X figure dollar business to quadruple that in the next 10 years. Like I want to be able to just grow exponentially. And that's where my place comes into the whole puzzle. Not so much on the front lines making the keto bricks. Now I'm still the one that formulates the keto bricks. Like I'm the one that's making the formulas, making the recipes. We're all taste testing at the same time with the coaching. Like I'm the one that's doing the one-on-one coaching. I have another coaching leg then, and I have coaches that kind of like 1099 contractors under my brand, but they're doing their own thing under my brand. Like when you work with me, Keto Savage, you are working with me one-on-one. Like I'm the one messaging back. So there are certain things that I delegate and certain things that I will always do myself. I think that's important. Like you got to have a blend of both.
No, that's exactly right. I think that makes a lot of sense. Do you think everyone can be a successful entrepreneur? Let's say everyone says, okay, I'm just going to put in the 50, 60 hours and put in all the effort, work hard. Will that equate to success?
Not necessarily. I think everybody can be an entrepreneur, but I don't think everybody should be an entrepreneur. Like the goal of being an entrepreneur is, again, over-sensationalized. Like people
totally
for that, but they don't really recognize what all goes behind it. And they don't honestly, like a lot of people don't want what goes behind it. And that's totally fine too. Like sometimes, as you and I can both admit to, we're envious of the people that do just simply get to punch the clock at the end of the day and then kick their feet up and spend time with their family. Like that is at sometimes very nice. Like I could not live like that indefinitely. Like I would not want that to be my existence. But for the people that do want that and they're fulfilled in that, happy, you know, more power to them. They would have no desire to do what we do in the business world. And that's fine. I'm okay with that. But for me, I couldn't live any other way. Like I could not subject myself. I mean, I could do anything if I needed to, but I had no desire to work for somebody else anymore and be at their beck and call. Like I want to take my skill set, my work ethic, and build my own thing in a way that I think can better benefit those around me and those in the community and this, those in this world. I feel like I can add more value doing that than if I was to ever just simply work for somebody and add value in that regard.
Totally. I think the difference between once you grow as an entrepreneur and have people work for you and have a team and where you have people building the bricks that you had the vision for is that you are the visionary. So you have the idea of where you want to have the business go to, and then you need the legs and arms to help you go there. So you're like the brain that sees the foreseeable future of where you view this, your company to go. Like there's so many goods and bads about being an entrepreneur. And I just wanted to have this conversation to share the truth of it. I mean, I work a lot. I work many, many hours. We talked about lack of sleep sometimes and how that's just kind of comes with the nature of the beast of this company, that our brains never shut off and our companies never turn off. They're always like, people could buy keto bricks at any hour of the day. And then we need to make sure that we could fulfill it. You know, what if there's a weather storm and then the post office is not working, right? There's all these little things, or your printer goes down and how are you going to send out the boxes, or you run out of boxes, or the UPS didn't, or the post office didn't deliver your boxes. There's so many things that can go wrong. And we have to be the people that in those moments, we work on the little fires while also trying to figure out how do we make sure to feed our teams, right? Financially support these families that we're now taking care of, but also making sure that our clientele or the consumers are being supported, right? So if they wanted something different or a different flavor, that they are making sure that they are taken care of. And these little nuances that you don't see outside, it's as the visionary of the company, you have to manage not only the external people, but you have to manage your internal team and then manage your family and then manage the business to make sure that it is chugging along. So there is so much. It's not about just being an entrepreneur and working for yourself, because sometimes the working for yourself is like double the hours you ever will work than you work for somebody else. But yes, there is freedom. If I want to take my kids to the park on a 2 o'clock afternoon, I can do that. But there's a lot of costs where during vacations, I may have to still get on my computer, right? So it's this fine balance where I think it is great to have be an entrepreneur because you get freedom. You get to build this vision that no one else will be able to get in your head and build out. But there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears beyond that. And I think you understand that the most.
Yeah, there's never any stop to it. I mean, like we can speak to that all day long. Like we were on the low carb cruise this past week. And you know, I was a speaker on the cruise. So it was a work trip. But a lot of people are on the cruise. They're just like having fun. I'm having some issues with one of my film suppliers for the packaging, and he forgot to order some of the SKUs that I sent him. So I'm on a cruise ship emailing somebody in California about getting these packages done. And I'm going through and looking at proofs and making sure everything's accurate. Like it never stops, you know, but I wouldn't want it any other way. Like if you are working for somebody else and you are not giving them your full effort, then you're stealing time from them, which is very bad. If you're an entrepreneur and you're not giving yourself the best effort, then you're stealing time from yourself. That's not any good either. You know, like you have to be able to have a sense of, you know, when to focus on your family, when to focus on your spouse, when to focus on some of the other pleasures you have in life. That's important. It makes it sustainable to work in and put the long hours in that's necessary in business. A lot of people talk about this work-life balance conundrum, and I've never really been a fan of that mentality. In my mind, if there's a work-life balance, then like if things perfectly balanced, it's zero. Like you don't want anything to be zero. Like I like all of my life to be improving exponentially. I want my family life to improve my business endeavors. And I kind of point to tensegrity. So like things under tension become more structurally sound. So I try to incorporate things in my life that benefit everything else. Everything's got a symbiotic relationship. Like my family endeavors benefit the business and vice versa. So yeah, that to me has been the big push lately.
Yeah, I think that's good. I don't think you can achieve greatness without hardship, right? So it's that it's so hard. I think gold is valuable because there's not a lot of it. And so you would have to search for gold for so long to get that finite amount. I mean, there's, you know, stories of always the underdog or hardship in a way of like, if I said a Bible story, but I don't know why that's the only thing I could think of right now, but David and Goliath, right? David's this really small person and has to beat Goliath, who's so big and no one wants to fight him. And it's always these stories of overcoming what you don't believe is possible. But when you actually do, and people can do it, it's just we are self-limiting by so many measures. And I think that, you know, when you brought up your example of being on the low carb cruise, so we went to Costa Rica for my husband's 40th birthday, and we thought the supplements, we have a small part of our company that sells us supplements. It's mostly to our clients. And the third party person that we used to send them out, they never got the package. They never got the $10,000 package. And so we were freaking out, because now obviously the clients are like, where are my supplements? And then it's like, Where are the supplements? Right. So he was on his birthday, he had to be on the phone trying to figure out what is going on and trying to track down those boxes. And it's just, it is the part of being an entrepreneur, but we have the luxury of going there and, you know, working on and off. And it's, I'm the same as you. I feel that there's so much about nutrition and wellness that I want to share with the world. And until I finish all of that, I don't want to stop. Right. And it's this desire, like I want to do children's books and I want to help with much more books and graphics and stuff. And in order to do that, I need to work. And it's a passion of mine and I want to do it, but it's not always pretty behind closed doors.
And doing that just brings this sense of confidence that you can't fake, like you can't manufacture that. Like you have to just earn it. Before I had success in business, like I knew the type of person that I wanted to be, how I wanted to emulate that, but it always came across as being, you know, inauthentic because it wasn't, I hadn't earned it. But once you find success in business, like it is a true testing ground for what you're capable of. And like when you have so many instances in which the worst case scenario always seems to happen, it spills over into everything in life, not just the business. Like, and I'm sure you can speak to this too, but like when you have packages that go missing like that, and you have to figure out the workaround, your ability to just think forwardly, like forward thinking as to, okay, what are the possible outcomes of this situation? What's the worst thing that can happen? What's the contingency plan in place if that happens? And you do that with everything, not just the business, but like your personal travel, your kids, like what's the worst possible thing that can happen? What's the contingency plan? Let's optimize for that. And then more often than not, it happens and you're totally good. You don't skip a beat because you just know what to expect and then you optimize around it.
I think the beauty of being an entrepreneur and all of these little things that go on and stuff that you don't expect to go bad or different is you become more resilient and then you realize how much more you can handle that. When the very first coaching sessions you had that you thought were so hard, and then you look back now and it's like, how easy was that? Right. And I think if people were to also, if they truly have the passion to be an entrepreneur or a coach and want to help save the world, which I think most people should do, it's, or not necessarily the entrepreneur, but just, you know, helping other people. But if you start, you'll learn that it's so much easier once you get started. And I think it's just getting over that hump of, but I don't know how to do it, or how would I even get started? And all those doubts, which is just human nature. Every time you overcome something bigger and bigger, it can happen. I mean, the first time I wrote a book, I thought that was the hardest thing of my life. And this year we're writing two books. And it's just, I don't know what I thought I was doing with two, but we're doing it, right? So it's just, it's layers and it stacks. And, you know, a question for you is, are there certain things that you recommend that entrepreneurs, just from learning lessons from you, certain things that people shouldn't do or should be cautious of?
It's a good question. I don't know. For me, my personality type is such that I would just never stop working given the option. And that's probably not the best thing. Like I like that my wife, Crystal, is a very big part of the business, but I like that she was never originally business-minded. Like that was never her passions or desires or goals. Now she has certainly morphed and become an integral part of the business because she's been with me from the very beginning of it all. But I like that she's kept me grounded in recognizing that there's more to life than just business itself. Like homesteading, like we're doing homesteading. We've got like a garden, we're raising animals. Like that is not really directly tied into the business. I can certainly make it work because, you know, you eat a lot of good, natural, wholesome foods on a ketogenic diet. So you grow your own food. So it works, but it's not like a direct correlation. So having things like that blend together and kind of allow you to be more even keel is important. And then also too, having a relationship with what is enough, like as a businessman that has seen some success, and I haven't reached the success that I want to by any stretch of the imagination, but like it could be very easy to prop my feet up and say, all right, I'm good, I'm comfortable. But at the same time, it could be equally as easy to never prop my feet up in the first place and never be comfortable. And I feel like you need to be able to know, I think it's good to have some source of contentment in life, but not necessarily satisfaction. Like I always want to maintain this hunger, this drive to keep pushing forward and keep being better than I am currently. But at the same time, I don't want that to be the cost that kills me. Like I want to be able to appreciate the moments and recognize that while I am hungry, I'm not at the point where I can't take the time to appreciate my son walking for the first time. Like I need to be able to have that in my life too.
Yeah, totally. I think it's so important. Just colleagues of mine or friends, I always wonder when is it going to be good enough, right? So I always try to reflect on my own life and think that. I mean, I was sick and I think that's the blessing and curse of what happened to me so that if I die tomorrow, I would be fine. Like that's how I truly feel. So I would love to get out all these books and graphics so I could help all these people. But if I die today, I would be okay with that. I know that my kids have a foundation. We have a little bit of that security for them, but I have to always remember, is it really like, am I chasing something that's going to bring me fulfillment or happiness? And I know that I'm not. And I think that's also key too. Like, I think because I got sick, I don't think of, I just need that $1 million house and then I'll be happy. I'm only working towards this one thing. And obviously we have to have goals and metrics in our business to reach certain dollar amounts or to impact certain amount of clients. So those numbers are good for targets to know that you're growing. But I'm saying that that does not drive me to want to do the things I do, because then if we don't hit those targets, if we're not happy, or maybe we do hit it and then we realize that's not what brought me happiness, and then you have to keep chasing something else. Am I making sense? I just think you have to be happy with today. And if you're not, and if you're not fully, not to say you have to be fully content and life is grand, but just that you are content with where you are and you know you're working towards something, but then knowing that that towards something is not what you feel will truly then make you happy.
Yeah. And then I think, you know, from a personal standpoint, like I like that we live below our means personally, okay, so that I could pour money into the business. Like I like the fact that we live in a little bitty tiny house and we're on 5 acres of land and we have chickens, you know, like I can get this big ball in a house if I wanted to, but that's not even my style. I have no desire to do that. I don't want to do that. I don't want to have the overhead of a higher mortgage payment. Like, I just don't want that. I don't need that. That's not what brings me happiness in life. Right. I would rather focus that effort on building something bigger than me. And I think a lot of people get into business and they have this itch to, you know, compete with the Joneses, so to speak. And that's going to make the business more of a job, because then you get caught in these golden handcuffs, they say, where you pretty much have to keep growing the business in order to keep up with your added payments every month. But if you just simply don't live like that and take pleasures in the things that you do have and find satisfaction and health and happiness and fulfillment elsewhere, then you'll never have that problem to begin with.
Totally. When I was a consultant, the partners made, I don't know, $300,000 to $500,000 per year. That was the average. And you have to buy in. And the thing I saw in it, as I was in consulting for at least 12 years, and that's a very long life cycle of being as a consultant. And I just saw that every single person was either medicating with food, medicating with some type of like prescription drug, or medicating with alcohol. And so I just thought, geez, like they're so wealthy, but they're all unhappy, right? They're either, and I'm not saying that medicating is making you unhappy, but some of them, the older men and partners would say, oh, like I love going to these dinners because I get to live an alternate life from my family home. And that just sounded so, and I wasn't married then and I was younger. And I just remember thinking, gosh, like the future looks so grim looking at these people's lives. And I think it's because maybe they think, and all of them were, you know, trying to beat the Joneses where their kids were going to nice schools, they had nice phones and nice cars and et cetera. But none of them seem like, I want to live your life in the future. And I think that was one of the warning signs to me before I got sick of, I'm probably in the wrong industry, because I saw people were not happy, even though they had probably the best jobs that anyone in America would want.
Yeah. I noticed the same thing when I was with the railroad. Like I looked at the people that were at the very top of the ladder and they all hated their day to day. And it's like, look, I have no desire to have any part of that. Like I would much rather make much less and then be excited about waking up every single morning. And if I make more, then great, I won't complain with it. That'll make me have a bigger impact. But I don't want to be beholden to a financial figure in order to just keep up with my current lifestyle expenses. Like that's just a trap. And I don't, same thing is true with regards to taking on a bunch of outside capital. You know, we didn't even talk about that, but a lot of companies will take on outside capital, angel investors, venture capitalists, and then you're beholden to their requirements. I've got a great friend who had a very successful business took on outside capital. They took an ownership stake and fired him from his own business that he built from the ground up. He since bought that back and is going to be able to try and breathe new life into it. But, you know, you got to ask yourself what you got into this in the first place for. Like, if you got into it to live a happier life and be more excited about the day to day, you can do that with much less money than you think.
Totally, totally agree. I'm always hesitant about getting another investor. I have a similar story of a friend. They built a multi-million dollar business. They wanted to grow even faster and got an investor. And long story short, because of COVID, because of that bad investor denying lots of things during stakeholder meetings, they went bankrupt. And that business was profitable. Like, they were never in the red, but because they opened up way too many stores because they were trying to grow way too fast. It's just, it happens. So, and not to say that not everyone should get outside investing, but so it's just not always the answer that you have to go to.
That's why I love bootstrapping it. You know, like, I don't grow as quickly necessarily, but I grow with a better solid foundation. And I just have a better sense as to how solid we truly are as a company. And I think, you know, if I'm not beholden to an investor or a certain dollar figure anyways, then I might as well grow organically and then just enjoy every single piece of the puzzle as I make it.
Yeah, totally makes sense. Are there any resources like books or people that you want to emulate that you've looked up to in the business world that you would recommend people listening or reading or watching?
So when I first got into the business and started doing content creation, the big driving factor for me there from a resource standpoint was Gary Vaynerchuk's book, Crush It. I haven't really listened to him much lately because he says a lot of the same thing, which is great because the message is still true. But his original book, Crush It, was great. Because it kind of just allowed me to see the benefit of creating content and documenting rather than trying to create something from scratch, like simply documenting the process. So that was a really pivotal one for me. Other resources, the thing about books and resources, and I kind of learned this lesson the hard way, like, you can have this, you know, you just get so inundated with information that you fail to take the first step. And I was reading, like, I've got bookshelves full of business books and I was reading them all. I was taking notes. I was just having paralysis analysis. And I feel like at some point you just have to simply dive into it. So there's honestly not a whole lot of books that I would say, hey, look, you got to read this one before you start. From a content standpoint, the book Crush It is a great place to start. But honestly, I would really just contact people that are living a life similar to what you think you would want to live and then try and spend some time with them in that day-to-day lifestyle. Like, if you have a relative or a person that you look up to that's local to you that is pursuing a career path that you would like to aspire to do, then just simply work for them for free for a day. Be the one that fetches their coffee. See what their life looks like. That's going to tell you a whole lot more in a couple hours than any book ever could.
Totally. There's a few things that I've learned from people that will say, as long as your message has some level of empowerment, education, or inspiration, or like entertainment, it will do well. So I think beyond that, it's just putting in the work, right? Making sure that every single day that you're working towards whatever business you're trying to grow. So if you're assuming that if, like, a really tangible way I talk about this a lot is if you're trying to make $60,000 as a coach, then what does your price point have to be? And how many coaches do you need in order to then make that 60,000? And then you march towards tangible numbers. So if one person then becomes $100 or $100 piece, then how do you find those types of people? And it's just putting in the work every single day. It's not just looking on social media and scrolling of like, what's the latest trend? And I need to jump onto that. I think that's actually a waste of time, to be honest. So I just think it's putting in the effort. And then over time, that fruit and labor will come. But you have to, I think the biggest thing that I've learned over being on social media is your service has to be good. Like, it's not just that you're popular on social media. People will buy your stuff. And if it's not good, you'll never have a repeat customer. And if your customer is not repetitive, the problem is that as you grow, your overhead is more expensive because you have more staff. And so for every keto brick, for example, you make, you need a repeat customer because to acquire one extra customer costs more money than when you were super small. And so knowing that, your product better be good, your service better be good. And so I drill into my team, like, we need people to leave us and say, you know what, they didn't fully fix me because I still need maybe a longer time frame, or maybe I needed something else, but they did at least fix or support X of me. And I grill it into them of, we need to make sure that people leave us and they feel I was supported, I was heard, my needs were met in some aspect. But if we just are like, yes, we got a sale, and then we have a crap behind the scenes, it will, over time, it'll bite us in the butt.
Yeah. You got to really be a disruptor in the space. Like, you want to be offering so much value that people can't help but talk about you.
Yeah.
That's what I've tried to do with the coaching. You know, like when I was first getting into bodybuilding, I hired a coach, and the way he would work is he would email me once a week with like just some simple macro adjustments, which to me I thought was very removed. Now, like I message all my clients from the very beginning, every single day throughout every single week, except for Saturday and Sundays. I've learned to take Saturdays and Sundays off from messaging my clientele. And I've tried to instill that for all the coaches that coach underneath me, like, be somebody that has multiple touch points with the people so that they feel like you're connected to them. When it comes to the keto break business, like, I want it to be a disruptor. Rather than making just another snack bar with subpar ingredients that you can get at any grocery store, I wanted to make the world's greatest performance product. And I truly believe that it is just that. Plus, it's 1,000 calories. It's got a cheaper cost per calorie than you can get in any bar. And it's like the highest quality ingredients that you can get in a bar. So it is a very much so unlike anything else out there. And that's why it's had the success that it has. You can spend, you know, 2 years making a great product that you then don't have to spend the rest of your life marketing, or you can get a product out there really quickly that doesn't have anything going for it. And then you're going to spend the rest of your life trying to market it. You know, like, you just have to reverse engineer and then add more value than anybody else is. And then people can't help but be an advocate for it.
Totally. I think that when I first released my book, I committed to a date, and I knew that the book wasn't 100% ready, and it was so hard, but we made the decision to release it, and we knew there were some mistakes in there. And it's the hardest thing I have to look at, because I've never looked at my book again because of that. It's just, as a perfectionist, it's so heartbreaking to see like little errors here and there. And so in turn, the second book, I know that I don't want mistakes in there. I want it to be good, but it's taking longer, right? And it's just, you don't want it to not be good enough, because then you'll have to always go back to the drawing board. And for a keto break, it's, you would have to keep reformulating because people are complaining about this or that. And it's, if you take the time in advance and you'd work on an ingredient or the perfect whatever recipe for 2 to 3 years, and then you finally perfect it and it gets out there, then it's all about making sure to market to the right people, but you know your product is solid. And yeah, then you don't have to worry about, oh, well, we just need a X amount, the people that hear about it, because they will, you, the power of people recommending on their own is so much more powerful than you'll ever be able to do by marketing.
Totally. And you have to realize that you can't be all things to all people. Like, we've had success by going very ultra niche with things. Like, I do ketogenic natural bodybuilding. That's a pretty niche endeavor. The Keto Brick is a very niche specific product, you know, carnivore. And your book is very niche as well. Like, you would not do well for your overall industry if you tried to appeal to the vegan community and write a book that allowed for a lot of their philosophies towards nutrition. Like, that's not who you're marketing towards. I'm not trying to market towards the people that want a 150 calorie snack bar. You know, like, this, you have to figure out who your target demographic is and then not deviate from that. I've had so many people come to me and say, hey, you know, I'd love if you made the brick 150 calories, 200 calories. I'd love if you allowed for X, Y, or Z with your coaching. But it's like, I don't want to do those things that dilute what I've built up to this point. I'm just going to keep doubling down on what I know to be true. If you are looking for something elsewhere, then somebody else has that for you elsewhere, but it's not where I'm at. And I'm not trying to appeal to the masses here. I'm trying to be a great, you know, value add for the people that get what I'm trying to do.
Totally. I think there was a book I recommended to you. I think it was Changemakers. And they talked about, there was just one part that really resonated with me. And they say, in the wellness industry, we have this like small pool, and we're like these sharks, like coaches are sharks. And the water is already red with all the blood of all the sharks, just like trying to get the people that are in that little water pond. But there's like a whole pristine ocean out there of blue waters that you can seek towards serving. And that's where I think the niche markets make sense. And I just thought, yeah, I see it where people are like, let me lower my price. It's like the race to the bottom of like $30 coaches, $20 coaches. Let me give you like coaching for super cheap. And then it's just, it's all about the price and not thinking about what service am I really providing? What is my end goal for the people that are using my service or my product, to make sure that I'm servicing them well? And it's just a race to the bottom. I mean, if you just go for, I will serve everybody for just weight loss. And weight loss can be a niche thing if you make it niche, But if you're trying to cover everybody, you're not going to get anybody.
Yeah, 100%. And that's true with the physical part. That's true with the brick. That's true with the coaching, the online space. Like if you are trying to appeal to the masses and be all things to all people, you will appeal to no one. So figure out what your unique value add is and then double down on that and then be relentless to give up any ground on it. Like just simply be the absolute best in your space with that topic, bar none, no questions asked. And you can't help but be successful if that's the case.
Totally. Do you think that people that want to get started should join a course, a certificate, a mastermind, or do you think,
That's a tough one. I mean, there's a definite increase in those, you know, certification programs. Like there's all these, you know, companies out there that say, hey, join this program. It's going to cost you $7.95 and then we'll teach you how to be a certified coach. Then boom, you'll be off to the races. I've never done one. So maybe they are a great value add. Maybe if I had done one of those in the beginning, it would have kept me from having to jump through some of the roadblocks I had to learn at the same time. But for me, like I like that the way I coach, the way I do business, the way I do things is based off of my own personal failures that I've learned along the way. And yes, having a good mentor can certainly save you some headache and then get you some initial momentum faster. But I feel like a lot of these coaching certification programs are just there to make money and they're very misleading to people. They just deal in blanket statements because I don't know how you'd be able to create a program like that that was as individualized as it needs to be if, you know, you're not making blanket statements. So I don't really know, to be honest with you. I can't really speak on that one because I haven't done one myself. There may be an extraordinary one out there, in which case it would totally change my mind, but I've never done one and I've had success with coaching without having done one.
It's interesting. So I went to Nutritional Therapy Association because I just wanted a more fundamental level of understanding of nutrition. I literally knew nothing about nutrition other than I thought plant-based was healthy for me and that's how I was eating. And I never even supplemented B12. Like that's how unknowing of nutrition I was. So I went, and then what I learned, because I did have the business background, was afterward, I just felt like there was a lot of selling at the end of, now that you're graduating, here's an additional certification you could get from one of the NTA graduates. And I have interviewed so many different NTAs for our team. And what I learned is a lot of people don't have that confidence. So they're like, one more certification, and then I'll put myself out there. And so some of the people we were interviewing had like 10 certifications. And it costs them so much money, and yet they're not making any money yet, or maybe making $1,000 a year just on the coaching side. And it's so little. And it's just, when is it ever going to be enough time? Or when is it enough that you feel unconfident? And so I would tell my team, even the first few people that I worked with, there was one that made me cry. And I said, I don't think I want to do coaching. Like, this sucks. And it just, you will feel that imposter syndrome for a little bit, but you have skill sets, you've learned enough, and it's just about helping your fellow neighbor. And maybe you have to do a little bit more research with the new question they came up with and just be honest and say, you know what, I don't know, but my role to you, my duty to you, is that I will find out and I'll get back to you. And it is okay. And then having each individual client or experience is what will allow you to build that confidence to then be able to go, look, I've learned this, or I know this, and let me try to help you. And that's how coaching can truly flourish. So I agree with you. I think it's not always about the certification. There's a lot of certifications that'll say this coaching gives you this success. But I know a lot of people that have done the practitioner programs that cost thousands of dollars and they're not making any money.
Yeah. I think it's important to have confidence in yourself and your abilities and know that you'll be able to figure things out and have the ability to learn. But at the same time, you have to be able to keep your ego in check and be empathetic and be very open and receptive to feedback you get. So like I've got one employee that's going to come back next week and do an exit interview. Like he's moving to a different job and we're going to do an exit interview so that I can pick his brain as to what I could have done better as an employer, what he liked, what he didn't like. And you got to do the same thing with your client base. Like I have a feedback form that I give to my clients when I stop working with them. Like, hey, I really value your feedback. What could I have done better? If you think you're great at communicating and you're communicating frequently enough, but all the feedback you're getting from multiple people says, hey, I feel like we're disconnected, I don't feel like we talk enough, then obviously you need to keep your ego in check and recognize that, hey, maybe that communication's a component that I need to work on.
Totally.
But if you provide those feedback forms and are open and receptive to it, I mean, that tells you incredibly valuable information.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I think that's where, again, that goes back to the one-on-ones. It just keeps you in reality and just allows you, because I think one thing that social media does, which that's why I don't take too much heart into it, is when so many of the people that are following you say, I love your content and everything is so good, I totally agree with that, you start to believe that what you're sharing is 100% absolute. But then when you work with clients, that's when you see the reality. So yeah. I totally agree. I think that is a benefit of working with one-on-ones too, just to get that ego check to make sure, you know, is it really helping everyone instead of the mega fans that are telling you that what you're saying is 100% legit, but it probably isn't. It isn't for anybody.
And you can't, like I said, I don't really consume much content on social. Like, I'm more creating and then I'll post and ghost, as the saying goes, because I don't spend a lot of time just like deciphering through all the comments and whatnot. But at the same time, I think it's very valuable to consume content from varying sources, you know? So like, I'll follow Lane Norton, for instance. Mm-hmm. Lane Norton is oftentimes not really in the
he's not a fan
limelight within the keto and carnivore space, you know, but he's got a lot of clientele that are following his protocol that are seeing tremendous success. So I can't really discredit the success they're seeing because he's got some sound piece of information. So not living in an echo chamber, not living with this dogmatic mentality towards everything that you're doing is key, because that open-mindedness and receptiveness allows you to be a better coach as well.
Do you plan your like 1 year, 5 year, or do you just sort of have certain goals? Like, how do you plan your future year?
That's a tough one. You know, people have asked me, what's your 5 year goal? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? And it's tricky because like with business, like I've launched businesses within a year of having the idea of the business, you know, like there are some things that are very easy for me to like stretch out over time and see, okay, this is where I want to go with it. But there's some things that are totally spontaneous that I'm excited about and passionate about, and I just want to freaking rock and roll with it. So it's hard for me to have tangible, structured 5 year plans. So no, I'm not really great at that. I know the kind of life that I want to live in 5 years, especially now that I have a son, because I'll see kind of where they'll be at those milestones as they age and how much flexibility and how much capability I want to have as a parent. So I'm kind of structuring things in that regard. So I don't really have like a dollar figure or like a X number of businesses that I want to have at X point in my timeline, but I just mainly want to focus on getting compoundingly, exponentially better every single year that passes across all different business entities. And there are some things like next year, for instance, we've got multiple businesses right now. So I've got Keto Savage, Keto Brick. I've got the book. I've got a course that I'm working on that's going to be a behemoth. I've got Deeper State Keto. I've got the apparel. Crystal's got Lady Savage. Then we got Live Savage. It's content around homesteading and stuff. It's just a lot of different pieces of the puzzle here. Next year, I'm not going to build any new businesses. I just want to simply double down the ones that I currently have so they can become better. And then the year after that, I've got two other businesses that I want to build, but I don't want to do those until I've got some better foundation laid. So just kind of spacing things out in a way that allows you to not spread yourself so thin so as to reduce the quality that you're offering.
Yeah. Our goal next year, just because I think we took on a little bit too much this year, is to say no. So our goal next year is to say, if it doesn't fit our main goals and whatever decision we make with that, if it doesn't fit, then we're just going to say no. Like our skills for next year is to learn to say no. And it's hard for me to say no, but I think that is something that we are trying to focus on, especially because our boys are a little bit older and I just want to be more involved in their life and just like the day-to-day. Like if they want to play for an hour, sometimes we have every day I spend time with them, but they sometimes want an extra hour. And sometimes it's hard for me to say yes to that. So I'd like to open myself up and not be spread super thin. So that's like one of my goals, but makes sense.
It's a great goal.
So a question for you as we're closing, you are also adding a competition for you and you're prepping and I see some of your posts. So what made you decide to do that? I know you already have your pro card.
Yeah. So the prep, I didn't even mention the prep earlier. So I am 12 weeks into prep right now. And I competed in 2017, earned my pro card then. And I'm trying to earn my pro card in a different federation this go round. In 2020, I did a prep, but then it got canceled right before the competition due to COVID. So I haven't competed since 2017. And like Keto Savage as a brand, as a business, like that was built on my competitive aspirations and what I was able to illustrate and prove through my competitive nature as a bodybuilder following a ketogenic diet. And I've gained a lot of new followers since 2017. I've built a brand since 2017. So I kind of want to bring that to the forefront again and show people what's possible when you're truly dialed in. And I want to reach a new level of conditioning that I've never reached before. Every single time I do a prep, I learn something more about myself. I become a better businessman. I become a better person. And I just gain so much more perspective. Like I take so much out of it, but it takes a lot out of me as well. So doing everything that I'm doing and then throwing a prep on top of it, is somewhat suicide, but I just thrive in that chaos environment. My life is very structured. My prep is very structured, but we are literally traveling nonstop. Like there are quite literally 2 weekends that are at home until the end of November this year.
Oh my gosh.
And then like, it's just total chaos, you know, total chaos, but I love it. Like we knew this year was going to be total craziness and everything's building the whole, like the prep will ideally help as a facilitator to promoting the course. Once I launch that, like I'll be able to use the prep as an illustration of what's possible when you apply the principles in this course. So I think everything will again be symbiotic in nature and work well together, but it makes me appreciate the simplicity that next year will hopefully bring that much more.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's just you have to build the foundation in order to be able to share. So I totally understand that. A lot of people will ask me, how come I don't service the beginners carnivores? And I just thought, I want to tackle the hardest carnivores and the people that have chronic illness. And then we can support the beginner because we know like all the nuances for the harder people. And so it's like building a foundation. So we didn't get to service a lot of people just because we're building this really niche group and supporting them and making sure like what are the levers to be able to support different carnivores. So I totally get that. And yeah, it's exciting. And I did 75 hard recently in my craziness because for the same thing, I thought I'm going to do hard, right? As crazy as it was, but
yeah, like for me, the more craziness I have, the more irons in the fire I have, as long as they all benefit the whole, the better everything else gets. Like if you are, what's the saying? Like an idle mind is the devil's playground or something like that. Like if you have nothing going on in your life, then you're not likely going to be making much progress with anything that you do want to make progress on. Whereas if you are just tackling life forward facing on all fronts, then everything else, again, as long as it's symbiotic in nature, is going to benefit and rise to the top.
Totally. Yeah. I think another saying that I always think about is distraction is like the enemy. So you have to just think, and obviously if it's adding to the whole, as you're saying, or it's holistic, then that's fine. But if there's something that's distracting you from doing, like, I think a lot of the work that I do is for my faith, but if it's not supporting that, then it's probably a distraction. And I think with idleness, right, that can bring that distraction as well. So it totally makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
Well, love it. Where can people find all your company? I don't know if this is like overwhelming for people or if people like love it. I have no idea. So we'll have to see. But I think I get enough questions at this point of people want to change their careers. And I think it's a great opportunity, but you have to also understand that it's not these rainbows and unicorns as people portray. There's a lot of hard work for people to be successful. And it is super rewarding. It helps you build grit, but people just have to understand if you want to be successful, I think the more work and effort you put in, the greater it could be. But where can people find all your companies?
And real quick before I answer that, you know, and you could say the same thing. Like before we started the business, we were working for the man, as they say, you were working much fewer hours than you are now, and you were more tired than you are now.
That's true.
You know, like when you start pouring yourself into things that you're interested in, you can see the fruits of your labor come to fruition. It energizes you in a way that you can't really get anywhere else. Like no amount of caffeine is going to fill your inner cup like being a part of something bigger than you that you are adding value to ever could. So yes, you're working more. It's certainly not sunshine and rainbows, but it has this weird way of just simply energizing you, which I freaking love. But to answer your question, all things Keto Savage. So ketosavage.com, Keto Savage on social for all of my endeavors within bodybuilding and content creation, and then ketobrick.com and ketobrick on social. For the food product, and then the apparel, livesavageapparel.com. There's a whole bunch of websites, but those two are the main ones, Keto Brick and Keto Savage.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And I agree with you. I think if you find your passion, and even if you work longer hours, it's not like, I don't feel like it's work. Like when I'm creating graphics or I'm creating design or I'm helping or doing some new research, to me, it's like, that's what I would do for my passion, even if I wasn't getting paid. So I think that's the difference. So if you want to do a business, maybe it's finding something that you're passionate about, because otherwise it ends up becoming a job. And when you have to work so many hours for a job that you don't like, it becomes very, very taxing.
Yeah. I mean, just simply figuring out what it is that you would do when you're not working. Like, what do you enjoy filling your time with? Like, I loved weight training and getting nutrition dialed in before I ever made that a career path. So that's a pretty good litmus test.
Yeah, no, it's good. Well, thank you so much. You know, based on if we get questions, maybe we'll talk more about this because it's so fun.
Always a pleasure. Take care.
Thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Okay, guys, I hope that you enjoyed this interview. There was a lot of nitty gritty in it, and I hope it shows you what it takes behind the scenes to even bring out content like my channel on YouTube or on my podcast, and also the way that we serve our clients. A lot of what you see online is actually the way, and if not more, that we take care of our clients and patients. You cannot have a good front cover or like the beauty of a external home and then the insides of the home be broken, because that is not a sustainable business. What you share and you advocate for and the content you put out must be also what's behind closed doors. And we do that. I mean, we can share a lot more of what we provide for our clients and patients, but we are proud of the work and efforts and resources we provide our clients and patients behind closed doors. It is fundamentally the way you should build a business, and also the way that you give care. People are putting in their hard money to work with you. So not that you will always have the right answer, but that you can truly support them, that they feel that their money was well spent. So that service, that level of product, that level of whatever you are providing is the level of care that you are saying that you are selling. Because over time, that sales pitch will no longer last if people see that what you're selling is not really what you're truly actually offering. Okay, guys, I know that this was a little different of a conversation, but this was actually a very requested episode from us. So we decided to collab and just share what we do in our own practices. Okay, guys, you know the drill. Make sure to eat a lot of meat. Take care of your bodies, because it is the only place you have to live. I will talk to you later. Bye, guys. Thanks for listening to the Nutrition with Judy podcast. If you liked what you heard today, please make sure to leave a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app so more listeners like you can find the show. If you want more practitioner care and support, head over to nutritionwithjudy.com/groups so you can get more real talk about carnivore, the environment, and root cause healing. You can also find my content on Nutrition with Judy's YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Make sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter and learn more about in-depth articles with infographics at nutritionwithjudy.com/articles. You can find my two books, Carnivore Cure and The Complete Carnivore Diet for Beginners, on carnivorecure.com and amazon.com. At the heart of Nutrition with Judy's practice, our mission lies with a deep, unwavering passion for service and community. We will continue to empower you to have the knowledge and tools to live a life nearly symptom-free, because we firmly believe in healing and wellness for all.